Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We still got a lot of ratification debates within Virginia alone to go through. It is a potpourri of facts regarding the terms, conditions, definitions, and clarifications of the Constitution. And these are legally binding terms, definitions, and clarifications and so forth regarding our Constitution. If you really want to understand the Constitution and how it is supposed to be enforced, how it is supposed to be implemented, you've got to read these ratification debates. This is where they actually discussed the operations of that instrument and how it was to be applied as the formation of this new government called the general government, or what you call today the federal government. So we're going to just jump into these things, but what I want to do is I want to explain the reason why the focus, I have such focus on this, like a dog with a bone, is due to the fact that these, again, are legally binding terms and definitions. If you want to expect people to play by the rules, then you have to acknowledge what the rules are and how those rules were defined. If you allow your government to make it up as they go along, just like a bunch of little kids, and that's what they've been doing, then they will become a very despotic government. And I think the proof is in the pudding. We have a very despotic government. They are doing anything and everything they choose to list to us. And we have the ability to stop it. Isn't that beautiful? To me, I think it is truly a blessing that we have these opportunities in these days to be able to step up and actually hold them accountable to our compact. And the only people that really have that ability are our state legislators. They are the ones that we delegate our sovereignty to, and it is their responsibility to hold them accountable. That's why Republic Review, in auditing this compact, in identifying every single infraction that the federal government has done and is continuing to do in exercising powers that they have not been formally delegated, those things can be shut down. Now, we may not like some of that stuff, but I'm telling you right now, there is such duplication at the state level that if we shut down the federal government, we're only saving ourselves billions of dollars, because that's how wasteful they are. Communism has run amok in the federal government because they're redistributing wealth as we speak every day. They're redistributing it through bureaucracies. And as Obama's administration and every administration has proven, they're actually throwing the money back to their loyalists to keep them in office and to keep the globalist agenda moving forward. I don't believe Soros became the billionaire that he became without the protection of government. It's the same thing with Bill Gates and all the rest of these folks. These evil, insidious people became rich and became good at working with government and getting government to help protect them. And so it's no news, as you see in the news, because we've been covering this, that the tech industry, that social media, everybody is in the tank for the globalist agenda. I don't even know, because if you look at the USMCA, I'm telling you, Trump's in the tank for the globalist agenda, because that document stinks. That document is worse than even NAFTA, and NAFTA was a sellout. So in some ways, there's no doubt in my mind, Trump is keeping the globalist at bay. But in other ways, I don't see that much of a difference. But I do see this, that in 2024, there will be enough populist support for setting aside the Constitution that we that we will be set aside, and you will rue the day that you did not get involved. That, you know, the day of reckoning is coming, folks. And, you know, there's been plenty of people that have foretold that the falling of America, you know, would happen. And whether you go into, you know, scriptural, or if you get into, you know, economics, there are all different oracles that have foretold the collapse of our American Republic. Now, some people say, oh, well, it won't be that bad. I'm here to tell you, the day we lose our liberty is the day it's gone. There's no getting it back like in the old days. Like with the American Revolution, as we lost our liberties from Britain, we were able to obtain them for ourselves. We will not be able to do that. Because as they assume this full sovereignty and full control over everything and set aside the Constitution, they will have the technology and the force that has never been available in the history of mankind. And they'll be able to surgically remove problems like you and I. Whoops, that was probably too loud, but just like that. And there's no doubt in my mind that with tyrants and despots, we will easily be put aside so that their agenda can move forward. And it will be, you know, and people will look at us as the belly achers and the problem. But once we're gone, then they become, it's just like that old adage, I didn't stand up when they came after these people. I didn't stop them when they came after these people and these people and these people. And then they realized that I was, you know, we were the last to stand. And by the time they came for us, there was nothing else we could do. So anyway, let's move forward. As you know, if you cannot stream this show, you should try calling the 605-562-4209 or the other listen line, which is 605-313-0599. Now, I'm just throwing this out here because what we're covering is gold. And you want to probably download these podcasts, or I should say the recordings of these shows, on reclaimingtherepublic.org on the Red State Talk Radio podcast page. Just pull in last week's and this week's podcast. And then you can listen to these quotes and citations. And yeah, I struggle with some of the words and the grammar of how they spoke back then. But if you listen to what I am reading to you, you will begin getting it. And sometimes they say it takes 7 times for marketing or advertising to really penetrate the brain housing group, your thought process, so that you actually understand what it is that they're trying to sell, or that, you know, why you need to buy that product or what have you. Listen to these ratification debates as many times as you possibly can. These are only the excerpts. I would highly recommend that you actually go through and read them. There are plenty more that I could easily pull up. These don't even really cover the militia debates. The militia debates, just across the multiple ratification debates that I have, the militia debates is about 30 pages, and I need to get those uploaded on MobiusStripPress.com. These ratification debates that I am reading, these highlights that I am reading to you today and this past week and a half, whatever, these are all up on MobiusStripPress.com as well. And so pull them up and sit down and read along with me so that you can hear it, you can see it, and it will register even quicker. You will see that the terms of this compact were far better defined than anybody wants you to know. That we do not need the Supreme Court to hold up, you know, their eyes and their hands to the heavens and claim divine providence in interpreting what this Constitution is supposed to be for us today. We do not have that type of living document. We do not have that type of government. The Supreme Court is not this vestige of knowledge and wisdom. The concept of constitutional law is a contrived concept. We were never, that concept of constitutional law was never established for the Supreme Court to create case law, precedents, and everything else with the Constitution. That in itself is an abomination of and a perversion and subversion of our Constitution. So, what we're going to do is we're going to get into the ratification debates. But I do want to just say, if you want to support what we're doing, if you want to support the only process that will actually save your liberty, buy Red State Coffee. Go online to reclaimingtherepublic.org and get yourself a pound of Red State Coffee. If you think that that coffee is pretty supreme coffee, then by all means, call our number, 425-270-5416, and let us know what you think. We've also got the crowdfunding on GoFundMe, reclaimingtherepublic.org. And there, you can always send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, so that you can get involved, so that you can actually be a part of the solution instead of being a part of the problem. Because you're one or the other. And the day you decide to no longer be a part of the problem is the day you really begin to make a difference. And I know you know exactly what I'm talking about. So with that, we're at a hard break. When we come back, we're going to be picking up Mr. Lee of Westmoreland. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. So this next line, like I said, or actually this is a very short quotation from Mr. Lee of Westmoreland. And you can tell he's getting pretty frustrated. And I can understand the Federalists, because there were points of contention that almost elevated to the point where there could have been a duel. I believe Mr. Corbin and Patrick Henry approached that point where they were kind of lobbing insults at each other. Now, the Anti-Federalist, Mr. Patrick Henry Lee, and his followings were, and he had some followings, and then there were people that were just legitimately questioning the anti-federalists, questioning this Constitution, and they were digging their heels in regarding some of the problems that they perceived. The number one problem that most everybody was relying upon was the fact that it didn't have a Bill of Rights. And so they kept on arguing that, this is a constitution that is giving the federal government or the general government this new thing, they call it a creature, unlimited powers. That's not the case. And so this is what Mr. Lee of Westmoreland states. He says, but says he, the creature destroys the creator. How has he proved it? By his bare assertion, by ascribing infinitude of powers clearly limited and defined for certain designated purposes. I shall not repeat the arguments which I have fully refuted this idea of the honorable gentleman. And to me, he clearly had, and this is what I'm saying, folks. When you look at what the anti-federalists claimed and you look at what the federalists claimed, what the anti-federalists asserted and claimed goes out the window. Nothing that they said supports the defining and or the Constitution. It was all a bunch of hyperbole to refute and to help get the Constitution scuttled so that they would be able to maintain their power. This caused the Federalists to clearly define even better and better and better. For days and days, these debates went on. And they clearly put it down on paper what this Constitution really was and how limited it truly is. So Mr. Madison says, and this is the next comment, the honorable member asks, why ask for this power if, the subsequent clause be not fully competent for the same purpose? If so, what new terrors can arise from this particular clause? It is only superfluity. If that latitude of construction which he contends for were to take place with respect to the sweeping clause, there would be room for those horrors. But it gives no supplementary power. It only enables them to execute the delegated powers. Now, the powers that they're probably talking about here, when they talk about these two clauses, the construction contenders, so there's the sweeping clause, which they're talking about is the necessary and proper clause. And then they talk about this subsequent clause being not fully competent for the same purpose. The subsequent clause that they're talking about is the supremacy clause, because the Constitution and laws made in pursuant, in other words, as the Congress has the ability to declare war and to tax and to regulate commerce with foreign nations and so forth, the laws that they make in pursuant to those particular powers are the supreme laws of the land. So when Congress decides to make a law regarding health care, it is not a law that is constitutional and applied to the Republic. It is a law that is only applicable to the District of Columbia, because you've got to remember that Congress has exclusive legislative authority over the seat of government, over the District of Columbia. That is why they have no business having their own representation, having their own senators, having their own representatives, and so forth. They are just like City Hall. I mean, the entire District of anybody that lives within the District of Columbia has to understand that you have lost your ability to elect and vote for your own representative. That is one of the reasons why the Virginia side of the District of Columbia withdrew its donation and accession to the federal government so that those folks would actually have their own representation. And so even though the Washington, D.C. and the District of Columbia, the 10 nautical mile square diamond that sits over there, over the Potomac, It's only formally applied to the Maryland side. But anyway, Madison goes on and says, but it gives no supplementary power. It only enables them to execute the delegated powers. If the delegation of their power be safe, no possible inconvenience can arise from this clause. It is at most but explanatory. It is at most but explanatory. For when any power is given, its delegation necessarily involves authority to make laws to execute it. Were it possible to delineate on paper all those particular cases and circumstances in which legislation by the general legislature would be necessary, and leave to circumstance in which legislation by the general legislature would be necessary, and to leave the states all the powers, I imagine no gentleman would object to it. But this is not within the limits of human capacity. The particular powers which are found necessary to be given are therefore delegated generally, and particular and minute specification is left to the legislature. So he once again is covering the fact that we're giving the federal government, the Congress, these very specific powers so that they can then delineate how they are going to implement those limited powers. I ask that you go through Article 1, Section 8, and go read through the list of enumerated powers. Those are the powers that have been granted to Congress. It is very clear that Congress does not have any power over education, housing, agriculture, or anything like the 12 executive departments that they have created since the first original three. Those first original three being the State Department administering our foreign affairs, the Treasury Department administering the normalcy and standards of our currency, and the War Department ministering the necessity of defending our republic, and that is it, from external threats. The internal threats is to be handled and administered by the militia, which are state bodies. They are the only ones that are to enforce federal laws. Okay? And we've covered this. So I'm hoping, and I'm pretty sure, I'm very confident that all of this makes sense. It starts, you know, the heavens are beginning to part for everybody, that they can actually see the wisdom in why we had the militia made the way it was, so that we would never have a federal standing army. But when they created the ATF, the BLM, and all of these other agencies, bureaucracy agencies, and weaponized them, we now have a standing army. And it isn't the United States Army, Marine Corps, Air Force, and so forth. Those are our external defense, and they don't use them against us. Well, every once in a while they do. But they have no business doing that. That is the whole role and the whole reason why the militia is embedded deeply into our Constitution. Now, Mr. George Nicholas goes on and says, the honorable gentleman says that if you place treaties on the same footing here as they are in England, he will consent to the power because the king is restrained to making treaties. Will not the president and the Senate be restrained? Being creatures of that constitution, can they destroy it? Can any particular body instituted for particular purposes destroy the existence of the society for whose benefit it was created? It is said there is no limitation of treaties. I defy the wisdom of that gentleman to show how they ought to be limited. When the Constitution marks out the powers to be exercised by particular departments, I say no innovation can take place. An honorable gentleman says that this is the Great Charter of America. If so, will not the last clause in the fourth article of the Constitution secure against dismemberment? It provides that nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. And so this is a little piece of gold. And he says this, and so, if so, Will not the last clause of the fourth article of the Constitution secure against dismemberment? It provides, quote, nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. That, my friends, is a little mark of gold. And actually, let me go into the fourth article and the very last clause, because this is all in section four. And I'm going to read the entire section when we come back, because this way you can understand in context what the heck this is all about, what this one little protection that is in the fourth article is all about and for. And this is how Mr. Nicholas kind of helps us out in these days. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so what Mr. Nicholas is referring to is the last clause within section or Article 4, which is Section 4. And this is the clause that says the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion and on application of the legislature or of the executive when the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence. Now, when domestic violence arises, the institution that is supposed to be used is the militia. But more importantly, what he's talking about is the dismemberment of external threats. And these guys didn't understand a globalist agenda of communism. But the Constitution actually and clearly delineates the whole purpose of a representative government. You have to understand that the 17th Amendment is a clear violation of our constitutional principles. It is also a violation of Article 5 of the Constitution, which we get into when we cover the Constitution, but it's the very last clause of the Constitution, and it says this. So there's two parts to this, and the first part is about the slave trade. Remember, I've talked about this 1808 slave trade, where the slave trade was mandated in the Constitution that it be shut down in 1808. So this clause in Article 5 is what we call the Amendment Protection Clause, and it protects the Constitution from having two types of amendments. First off, they knew that within 20 years, there may be a move to try to amend the Constitution to get rid of the stipulation or the requirement of shutting down the slave trade. They knew that the South may try that, so they put this in here to protect the integrity of the eradication or the slow eradication of the slave trade and slavery in America, so that they made it so that they could not insert an amendment to remove that. And the second part of this is to ensure that states could not lose their suffrage without their consent. In other words, an amendment does not, if you reject the amendment, but the amendment passes by enough states, you still do not lose your suffrage. And we've gotten into this a lot, but I'll just state it real quick. Provided that no amendment, this is out of Article 5 of the Constitution, provided that no amendment, which may be made prior to the year 1808, shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article of this Constitution, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. So when Utah, Delaware, and other states did not provide consent to the 17th Amendment, they're not bound by it. And that's pretty clear. But anyway, so Mr. Nicholas kind of points out this protection that we have with the Fourth and the Fifth Amendments, or not articles, Fourth Article and the Fifth Article of the Constitution, that we are kind of protected even from a globalist agenda, because with communism, they want to move us into a democratic form of government where we, and the 17th Amendment actually pushes us into a democratic form of government because it annihilates the representation of the states, where the people elect and the people have full control over both houses. It was never intended to be that way, that the state legislatures were the ones that were supposed to control the Senate to ensure that no treaties, because the whole point of this conversation that Nicholas was bringing up was the concern over treaties. If you remember, it was all being taught or brought up that, you know, what is going to restrain the president and the Senate from, you know, ratifying a treaty that was going to do harm to the republic. And so he kind of points out that, well, if you look, the Article 4 of the Constitution, and I point out that Article 5 of the Constitution does kind of protect us. Now, the better part is you need to listen to my argument regarding the 17th Amendment and how it can easily be rescinded. Now that states are starting to wake up and say, hey, we have lost our representation in the Senate as a true Republican form of government, that the states do require representation. And so, to me, it just stands out that the 17th Amendment can easily be repealed, but you'll have to tune in when we get into that. Maybe we'll get into that in the next week or so. But the next quotation I want to get into is by Mr. Pendleton. The next clause settles the original jurisdiction of the Supreme Court, confining it to two cases, that of ambassadors, ministers, and councils, and those in which a state shall be a party. It excludes its original jurisdiction in all other cases, but it appears to me that it will not restrain Congress from regulating even these, so as to permit foreign ambassadors to sue in inferior courts, or even to compel them to do so. We've actually seen this happen with Trump and what he's been doing with, help me out here, with the immigration of Mohammedans to America, where he has basically said these countries cannot just migrate here, nor can we bring them in as refugees and so forth. And that has been actually shut down, or I should say sued,
by ambassadors and or by states. And so where their cause may be trivial or they have no reason to expect a partial trial, notwithstanding this jurisdiction is given to the Supreme Court, yet Congress may go further by their laws so as to exclude its original jurisdiction by limiting the cases wherein it shall be exercised. They may require some satisfactory evidence that the party could not expect a fair trial in the inferior court. I am struck with this view from considering that the legislature is not excluded by the general jurisdiction of the Constitution from regulating it to accommodate the convenience of the people. Yet the legislature cannot extend its original jurisdiction, which is limited in these cases only. Now, even more importantly, because he doesn't cover it, but Mr. Marshall will be covering this. And Mr. Marshall actually covers that the jurisdiction of the federal government is limited clearly by the enumerated powers. If it is not an enumerated power, Congress has no business meddling with it, as well as the Supreme Court has no jurisdiction in hearing any cases regarding health care, life, and or abortion or energy and education and those types of things. And yet the Supreme Court has dabbled in all of these, and they have driven a globalist agenda down our throats. Now, Mr. Madison says this: I have observed the gentlemen suppose that the general legislature will do everything mischievous they possibly can, and that they will omit to do everything good which they are authorized to do. If this were a reasonable supposition, their objections would be good. I consider it reasonable to conclude that they will as readily do their duty as deviate from it. Nor do I go on the grounds mentioned by the gentleman on the other side, that we are to place unlimited confidence in them and expect nothing but the most exalted integrity and sublime virtue. But I go on this great Republican principle, that the people will have virtue and intelligence to select men of virtue and wisdom. Is there no virtue among us? If there be not, we are in the wretched situation. No theoretical checks, no form of government can render us secure. To suppose that any government will secure liberty or happiness without any virtue in the people is a chimerical idea. If there be a sufficient virtue and intelligence in the community, it will be exercised in the selection of these men, so that we do not depend on their virtue or put confidence in our rulers, but in the people who are chosen them. And so this is one of Madison's comments, but and arguments for, you know, that the people be virtuous and so forth. They didn't understand that as they started allowing the federal government to become the judge of all things for itself. In other words, and in the Federalist paper, Madison says no man can be a judge of himself, because if a man becomes a judge for himself, in other words, I can judge everything that I do is good, then that's exactly what you'll do. You'll justify and you will never find your own faults and so forth. So when it comes down to it, the only reason the federal government is a judge for itself is only over those things that it is to protect, those enumerated powers. But as it started creeping and assuming new powers, then it started assuming the ability to protect those unconstitutional powers. And so that's the whole point about jurisdiction. And that's why, you know, the focus of these next few citations are going to be regarding that jurisdiction and so forth. So we're at a hard break. We will be right back after these two promos. So please stay tuned, and we've got another Madison citation coming up. Thank you so much.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Yeah, so as we dive into Madison, the next citation of Madison, I hope you're starting to recognize that these citations are probably our nation's greatest treasure, because they clearly point out and identify what the Constitution really is and how it was defined. By using these definitions, we now have the power and ability to get the federal government back into compliance. Our state legislatures can use these documents and clarify every single question of authority, jurisdiction, and constitutional powers. As they go through and they look at this, these mediations of the contract, as the states were considering the compact and whether they were going to join in this compact or not, they will clearly have the clarity necessary in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. You hear me say this a lot, but I'm hoping this actually, the epiphany, your head's just exploding at this point in understanding what a national treasure these documents really were and how foolish we have been to simply rely upon the integrity and the honor of those elected servants that we have had. Because, as anybody can tell you, anyone that has been given power, as soon as they assume the mantle of power, most men, most women will instantly begin to practice what I would call unrighteous dominion, or using tyranny and their form of power. How many times have you ever heard your boss say, "Do it because I said so. Do it because I'm in charge"? That is an autocratic person. And that is a person that is going to do whatever they believe is necessary so that they can have whatever success they want, whatever agenda that they're pursuing. Our Constitution was given to us by the divine hand of providence to protect us from that kind of thing or that kind of ideology, that kind of personality of an authoritarian, because the Constitution defined precisely what powers they could use, and that was it. And leaving the domestic powers to the state was purely the divine hand of providence. So Madison goes on and he says this. He told us that this Constitution ought to be rejected because it endangered the public liberty, in his opinion, in many instances. Give me leave to make one answer to that observation. Let the dangers which this system is supposed to be replete with be clearly pointed out. If any dangerous and unnecessary powers be given to the general legislature, let them be plainly demonstrated, and let us not rest satisfied with general assertions of danger. So Madison's actually calling out the anti-federalists for just using hyperbole. They're just coming out and they're just saying, oh, the sky's falling. And they're not providing any sufficient evidence. They're not pointing to anything that says because they have this one power, this can crush us. They're just saying that they want a Bill of Rights. And so Madison goes on and says, let us not rest satisfied with general assertions of danger without examination. If powers be necessary, apparent danger is not a sufficient reason against conceding them. He has suggested that licentiousness has seldom produced the loss of liberty, but that the tyranny of rulers has almost always affected it. And that's basically what I was just telling you. Since the general civilization of mankind, I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachments of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations. I hope what I just read right there not only resonated with you, but it actually, you know, your head exploded. And I'm going to repeat it. This is gold. Since the general civilization of mankind, I believe that there are more instances of the abridgment of the people by gradual and silent encroachments of those powers than by violent, sudden usurpations. And I'm here to tell you that's exactly what's been taking place for over 200 years with the general government slowly creeping and grabbing this and then grabbing that. And, well, it seems like they're doing okay. This goes back to comments that I've gotten from the good Dr. Vile. Well, we've been doing it for 200 years. I mean, you know, it's kind of like we're accepting this. It is a compact. We do not have to accept it. And at any point in time when we recognize that the compact is actually being violated and nobody has told us and that we have this epiphany, we are obligated to interpose and to arrest these evils. And those are the words of Madison during the resolutions. But, and this is going back to Madison, after he says that those powers then by violent, you know, that the gradual encroachments are the things that usually collapse a society than a sudden usurpation. But on candid examination of history, we shall find that turbulent violence and abuse of power by the majority trampling on the rights of the minority have produced factions and commotions which in republics have more frequently than other cause produced despotism. And so this is where we see where we've had FDR produce despotism, because if you remember, and I think it was it started with Hoover in, you know, identifying the illegal aliens from Mexico that were here, and it ended up with Eisenhower. But each administration up until Eisenhower was beginning to deport illegal immigrants because they were the scapegoat for, you know, our economic problems and so forth. And again, it was demagoguery and despotism that was being applied by these progressives. And yes, even Eisenhower was a collectivist progressive. Eisenhower
may have given us this conservative concept with the sleight of hand, saying, be forewarned about this military-industrial complex. In the same breath, or under his breath, he was creating the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, which was far more insidious than the military-industrial complex. It is the education system that is giving us our Bolshevik Revolution by programming, indoctrinating kids into communism, and they will be standing up in 2024. So what Eisenhower did with education, as well as healthcare, look at healthcare. The industrial healthcare complex is far more insidious than even our military complex. There's far more money involved in that than war. And welfare itself is, by creating the entitlement state, has created a nation of lazy dolts. So you can't tell me that Eisenhower was a good conservative man. Everything he did was promoting the progressive agenda, even though he seemed like a good moral and conservative. Not. I'm not buying it. I'm sorry. Madison goes on and says, if we go over the whole history of ancient and modern republics, we shall find their destruction have generally resulted from those causes. If we consider the peculiar situation of the United States and what are the sources of that diversity of sentiment which pervades its inhabitants, we shall find great danger to fear that the same causes may terminate here in the same fatal effects which they produced in those republics. This danger ought to be wisely guarded. Perhaps in the progress of this discussion, it will appear that the only possible remedy for those evils and means of preserving and protecting the principles of republicanism will be found in that very system which now which is now exclaimed against as the parent of oppression. And I'm here to tell you that it's not, I don't want to just end it right there. I think what he should have said is, as we have now defined it, because the Constitution by itself, as I have told you, did allow for these men to hoodwink us with these implied powers from the Supremacy Clause. If you did not understand the Necessary and Proper Clause, the General Welfare and Defense Clause, as they defined it in these ratification debates, that is why we've been hoodwinked and why we've gone down this path, because we have completely divorced the terms and definitions of this compact and have put them aside with prejudice, because there's no doubt in my mind, John Marshall knew exactly what he was doing in putting aside these ratification debates and coming up with his own new definitions, which everybody, in doing so, he created unconstitutional footings. And in doing so, we started building upon all of these concepts of these portals for new powers, where they use the Supremacy Clause, the Commerce Clause, the Necessary and Proper Clause, and the General Welfare and Defense Clause in expanding federal powers. That is why we have 12 executive departments that are not defined and enumerated within our Constitution. And this is the primary reason why we have to exercise republic review. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless, and we'll be back with more citations in our next episode. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org. take.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.